Final hour of B. Mitch and Finley. Toby Altizer sitting in for JP this week. It's time to get out to the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Welcome in the cowboy killer himself, Santana Moss. Santana, how you doing today?
What up, fellas? How y'all?
We good, man. Hey, Tyler, we find out that Fred can't cook, right? So Fred been buying cookies from Wegmans?
Oh, my God. So I'm gonna say this. Now I've had a lot of Fred, I guess you can say, things that he's baked, and they came out pretty well. But I've always scratched my head and I'm like, Fred, is this star boy? Because it's just too good to be true. And so when the cookie ordeal happened, I was like, bro, I haven't seen any perfect cookies like that in a long time. I haven't personally baked cookies, but I've been around a lot of people who can bake, and I've never seen their cookies come out that perfect. So
I know who right can, I know cookies come out like that. Wegmans cookies come out like that.
But I want to give my dog a little credit because he had brought some things in there, man, that was point, you know, that was on point, and I don't think it was so bought, but
I'm gonna follow him. I'm about to follow him from now. I'm gonna find out for real.
Oh, man.
So the story is somebody posted that say Fred is always at Wegmans. Those cookies that he bring are Wegmans cookies. The lady said she work at Wegmans. So, Fred talk to everybody.
Yeah. He spoiled his secret.
The cat is out.
So, Santana, I've seen recently the team put out a podcast called Hail Tales. It's really cool going back through memorable moments throughout Redskins football team Commanders history. And recently they put one out for the Monday Night Miracle. Take us back to that night and how special that was.
I mean, it wasn't special the whole night up until those two touchdowns, if you had to ask me. And that's one of the reasons why when I'm asked all over, you know, what was my favorite moments, it's hard to say that. But after walking these streets up in the DMV and understanding what it meant to the fans, you know, their take on it won me over. So that's why I give it, you know, number one on my chart now. But leading up to those two catches, man, it was just one of those situations where it was only my second game as a Redskin, and we just wasn't playing right. You know, we hadn't scored any touchdowns yet that season. You know, the first week we won with two field goals against Chicago at home, and then now we're in game two, which is a Monday night in Dallas. And if you know the history of, you know, Redskins Dallas or Redskins Cowboys and the history around that franchise at the time with Dan Snyder being the owner, we hadn't won in Dallas yet. So I didn't know all these stats as I, you know, just being, you know, involved into this rivalry. And I go out there the last couple of plays, I guess you can say it, before that drive, and I remember me and CP on the sideline just talking, and I was pissed off, ticked off, and Portis being Portis, he walked away from me. I'm thinking he's finna just say, you know, let me leave Tanner alone. And he comes back with the head coach, and, you know, Coach Gibbs asked me did I want to run the plays that I had mentioned, and the rest was history, man. So leading up into the moment, it wasn't special, but after, man, I mean, I can't put another game in front of it.
So he asked you, did you want to run the plays, and he called the plays? I like that.
So all week long, you know, you got to think about it. When these guys just, you know, acquired me, they had been asking me questions about things I like to do in the offense, you know. We hadn't got there yet because we just, you know, we were still trying to get acclimated with our passing game. Our run game was sound. And so being that I'm newly acquired and, you know, they still trying to get the hang of what I can do and what I can't do, you know, as a receiver, that's the one thing I will say. You know, people ask me all the time, Tanner, did you ask for the ball? No, I didn't. But if you ever had to ask me, what can I do? I can do it all. And I'm not saying it just to say it. Uh-huh. You watch the tape. I felt like a guy in my structure at 5'10". I can run any route, you know, known to man, you know, when it comes to being a receiver. And whether I'm, you know, asked to do a jump ball, I can do that too. I was a jumper in high school and college. So when he asked me, hey, you know, that week, I gave him a set of plays that I know that we can run against a particular guy that was playing corner, which was Aaron Glenn at the time. Mm-hmm. Aaron Glenn was my former teammate with the Jets. So I remember guys running certain plays and certain routes on him. Being a receiver, studying football, I like, oh, okay, Aaron Glenn's so good, but these guys seem to get open on these routes. So I brought that to the, you know, brought that to the coaches that week. We hadn't ran it the entire game until I mentioned it to Portis, and that's when Gibbs came back and said, Tanner, you want to run the Dino route? Sure, Coach. Find time, but sure, let's do it.
Let's get it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Santana, someone that's played with a bunch of different quarterbacks in your time in the league, how important is it to have continuity year to year? Thinking more so like Terry McLaurin, where they're going to get this contract situation figured out, I assume, and he's going to be back with Jaden for a second year. It's the best quarterback he's played with in his career, but he's going to have continuity with Jaden and some of that chemistry that he can build on year to year. How important is that, and how does that look as it evolves?
I think it's very important, but I also think as a receiver, being a pro sometimes, you have to overcome a lot of that stuff when you don't have that continuity. And Terry is, by example, he has shown you that year after year. He played with more quarterbacks already thus far in his career than I probably did, and I played with 15 in my 14-year career, 14-year career. So, but to have a guy like Jaden now, at this point in his career, man, I think it's huge, and I think you saw how big it was for him individually last year. I think that was one of the better seasons that we saw from Terry, despite him having 1,000 yards every year, since his second year in the league.
Terry, we were talking a lot about, they have a lot of games next year, but, people look towards the game in Madrid. And they had 700,000 people, spots on this thing waiting for tickets today. They finally sold out. I think there's a lot of bots on there. What's your thought on that game? Are you looking forward to it? Just playing over there, watching them play in Madrid for the first time?
I think having a seat that we have, yes, I'm looking forward to it. But I think what will make it special, we have a good time on the road. But I think what will make it special if we have in one of those seasons where we in the hunt. You know what I mean? I'm not sitting here trying to, get too far ahead of myself and say I want to have the same type of season last year. Sure, we all do, but I want to be in the hunt. I just want to be a good team that's trending in the right direction by the time we get to Madrid. And I think that what makes it even more something, looking forward to these fans to go up there and see our team, compete. But I think when you look at it, just being out the country, these fan bases now, man, we saw how our fan base traveled to our away games this past season. So you can just imagine what it's going to be like for them to get out the country and be able to sit back and enjoy some good football. So when you have a guy like Jaden Daniels and staff, when you have a staff, that Dan Quinn has put together, it's just, man, it's one of those things that give you something to look forward to. And I'm looking forward to all of it, but Madrid is definitely high on my list, as far as the games I want to see this year.
Talking with Santana Moss on the Rude Guest Hotline here on B. Mitch and Finley, Toby Altizer in for JP. You talk about the fan base. How have you seen the fan base evolve as your time, obviously playing for the team and then to where it is now? It felt like it died down a little bit, but last season it felt like it kind of reinvigorated the fan base, seeing the winning culture again, seeing Jaden Daniels play so well. How did you kind of see that yourself?
Yeah, reinvigorated. That's a good way to put it, man, because I think when you look at 4 or 5 years previous to that season last year, we weren't looking good, man. I mean, you go to that stadium, it was just a lot of the other team colors there all the time. And it's tough, man. It's tough to be a home to have home field advantage, and see your opponent's colors at home more than you see your own. And not to say that we didn't see our own, but it's just tough to see a lot of your home, the opposing team colors at home, and so just to see last year a lot of those fans, and you got to think about it, me and B. Mitch, we have our share with these fans. We go to some of the things that they put on through the off season where we're trying to get season ticket holders to buy back in and to probably get some of these suites. We have a chance to talk up close and personal with these fans and see what they want and see why they are back. And to tell you the truth, man, some of the stories I've heard, it goes to show you how important it is to put up, I guess you could say, something that these guys can call theirs, and I think that's a good team. And that's what you see that these guys have done, when it comes to our GM, our head coach, and these players, for them to go out there and do what they did last year, it's one of those things that you say, here you go for being who you have been to us for so long. And that's what I felt like when I saw those, those fans back. They was appreciative again of what our team was doing, and that was playing good football.
I know we went to games. The game in Arizona, they took over. They took over.
Tampa,
they took over that. Detroit thought it was going to be an easy run. I mean, but they, I'm talking about, there are fans on the road that don't even go to the game.
Yeah.
You know, they're at the hotels. Yeah, they're hanging around. They have watch parties on the road because they want to be in the city.
Yeah.
So, they're coming back. You know, I saw some great years at some time. I'm telling you, it is back. And I think that the way they stay here is the team have to go out, not necessarily be exactly what they were last year, but be something competitive. Yeah. As Tanner say, being a hunt.
No doubt.
Being a hunt.
Santana, when you look at we were talking about this earlier. Cam Newton had some comments about Jaden, talking about, is he a one-hit wonder, and talking about RG3. You played with RG3. Now you've obviously have a relationship with Jaden being around the team. What are some of the similarities and differences you see between those two? Because immediately when Jaden was drafted, everybody draws the parallels of, they say, the running quarterback, drafted number 2 overall, Heisman Trophy winner. But I think you can see the differences in their game. But just what have your interactions been like with Robert obviously being his teammate, and then with Jaden being around the team? What's the differences you've seen between those two guys?
I mean, you know, it's one of the things that I think everybody's seen, you know. When you really look at it, Jaden is a guy that runs second. You know what I mean? He can honestly dissect a defense and tear you apart sitting in the pocket. And when you're young, you expect, you know, most quarterbacks to kind of go through the ups and downs and say, you know what, you know, he's going to try to get out the pocket a little more. He's going to try to escape so he can see things a little clearer. And I don't know if you want to give a lot of credit to just Jaden himself or both Cliff and Jaden, but we all said last year when we saw him get off to a great start, we was like, okay, when is it going to hit the wall? When is it going to hit the fan where, you know, this everybody's going to start saying, okay, now we know him. Now we know what to do. We're going to sit back and we're going to, you know, sit in coverage and make him, you know, pick us apart, find an open guy. They did that. And guess what? They wish they didn't. So that's what shows out to me. You know, you couldn't just sit there and dictate what you wanted to do to the kid. He was the dictator. He was the guy that said, I'm going to go out here and show you that you can't present nothing to me, because if you rush me, I'm going to step up in the pocket. I'm going to look to throw it. And if it's nothing there, I'm going to take off on you. Mm-hmm. If you don't rush me, I'm going to find the open guy, whether it's I'm dinking this ball off or getting us 5 or 10 yards, but I'm going to find him. So that's what I saw that was different. I think with RG, you know, I'm not here to say that he couldn't do that, but I think the offense that the Shanahans put in place for him was perfect. That year one, that was what we wanted. You know, unfortunately, he got hurt, and I think that led to him not wanting to run the ball as much. And, you know, when you're a kid, you don't know, man. You really don't know if you're crippling yourself by making some decisions. And I think, to me, the injury – played more into Robert saying, I don't want to be a runner, than more so than him just saying mentally, I can't do it. Because if I'm having a season that Robert had that first year, run me, coach.
All day.
That won the game. You know what I mean? That made us win. And that's how I looked at things. I thought as soon as he went away from that, that's what allowed teams just to be able to tee off on him and sit back and say, now found an open guy. And that didn't work out that smoothly.
You know, I think the thing what I noticed about Jaden is, if he struggles with something this game, try the same thing next game. He's going to pick it apart. He was like, he reinvented himself every game. And like you stated about young guys normally don't do that. You know, I've always said that you have to not only watch film of other people, but you watch film of yourself to see what kind of like little tips you're giving off. And you watch Jaden play, and he doesn't do the same bad thing twice. So I think he's also correcting his stuff. And finding out, because he talks to Bobby Wagner so much, who's probably seen every offense under the sun, and he probably tells him, well, you're giving off this. And then he changes that. And I think the thing about a young quarterback, normally when a young quarterback come in with a lot of hype, they don't listen to anybody. That kid listens. And that makes a world of difference for me.
Yeah. You got to be a student of the game, too. I think that's one of the things that's bright about him. When you get a chance to step off, see him outside the field, and especially just talking to his parents. Like, I spoke to his dad a couple of times, I spoke to his mom, and it's two different personalities, but you hear the same thing. And just knowing what his dad taught him, you know, his upbringing, you know, through the sport, you can see it actually displayed each and every time he steps on the field. He's a student of the game. Like you just said it, B. Mitch, you can't present something to him once and think that you're going to be able to do it twice. And they just asked him this question earlier this year, you know, during the offseason, like, what are you doing right now to make sure that, you know, you don't have one of those sophomore, you know, I'm not going to put it out there in the air. But, and he said it. He said, look, man, I'm studying, watching what I didn't do so well last year. And I'm going to try to make sure I do it better. And that's a student of the game. That's the guy that understands that regardless of how good I played last year, it's about the things I didn't do well. And I want to be able to go out there and acknowledge that and say, okay, this is what you got to, you know, work on. And having a guy like Bobby Wagner, being a guy from the West Coast with him, he talks highly about that friendship. I mean, we can't give enough credit to this staff bringing in guys like that, a Wagner, Zach Ertz. You know, that's what you need. You need that veteran leadership that has been to the pinnacle, that has seen it done on a high level, that's able to be able to give guys like Jaden and all these other young guys those nuggets that they don't get from coaches, that they get from the players themselves that played, that's been through those lines. And that's great to have a guy like that. So I think it's phenomenal to have those guys, but I also think it's phenomenal to have a young guy that understands that it's all about correcting what you didn't do so well.
Talking with Santana Moss here on the Rude Guest Hotline. Last one for you, Santana. Luke McCaffrey last year, he was you saw flashes at points, and I think when you got the ball in his hands, he could make something happen. What do you need to see out of him this year, or what does he need to improve on to be a bigger part of the offense this season?
You know, you just keep getting better, man. You know, it's not one or two things here and there, man. He showed me things last year that I didn't quite expect to see last year, you know. So that shows you who he is and where he come from. I think when you look at his lineage and the kind of, you know, tree that they have when it comes to this football thing, you know, you're not surprised about some of the things you saw last year from him because you know what his dad did, you know what his brothers, you know, have done so far in his career. And I just look, you know, I'm very confident just knowing that he's going to take care of what he can take care of. That's one of the things about being a player in this game. You only can take care of what you can do. You only can control what you can control. And I think he showed you that. As a rookie, I didn't expect to see some of those flashes. I expected a guy that, you know, they might put in the game here and there, but they showed that, hey, they had confidence in, you know, where he was at, you know, thus far in his career. And I'm looking forward to him just getting even better, because when you have a chance to be around that offense or any system and a quarterback that we have, man, you can put a subpar receiver out there on the field and Jaden's going to make him better because he's going to find when he's open. He's going to give him the ball at the right time. And so if you're anything at your position, it's great to have a guy like Jaden Daniels, because guess what? He's going to make the world see it because he's going to give you the ball at the right time.
Dan, I was telling Jeff, I'm going to have to make sure we bring some extra money because Jeff claims he's going to Madrid. So, you know, we got to make sure we get him out because, you know, he'll do something to end up in the slammer.
Hey, well, we got to make sure Jeff and Fred ain't together because they're bringing Fred, too. So
oh, my Lord. Oh, hell.
Hold him out for the South.
We got to bring all the credit cards now. We got Fred and Jeff. Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, man. It's going to be one of them kind of trips, man. It's going to be one of them kind of trips.
Oh, boy.
Well, Santana, appreciate the time today. Enjoy the rest of your day, man.
All right, brother. Y'all take care, man.
All right, man. Be cool.
That's the Cowboy Killer himself, Santana Moss, joining us on the Rude Guest Hotline.
I'm serious.
It's going to be.
Yo, I'm going to have to bring some of my Spidey senses out there to make sure I keep you out of trouble, boy.
Welcome back. Chunky's come to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV in Richmond. Appreciate you checking us out on 910 The Fan or 105.1 FM. We are streaming live coast to coast on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. And you can watch us on the Monumental Sports Network, presented as always by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies, looking to be their next 5-star HVAC technician or plumber. Just visit cropmetcalf.com to join their team. I'm John Paul Flame, joined by Eric Bickle and Jason Bishop. Scheduled to join us here momentarily is Mike Rizzo, the ousted GM and president of baseball ops of your Washington Nationals.
I know that they've been texting back and forth this morning, so I know he's going to come on imminently, but I see them just kind of trying to line up the phone lines and make sure it works. I don't know about you, but one of my first questions is, I wonder how shocked Mike was. Because
we'll get to that.
Yeah, because a lot of people were shocked when this news hit. Is he there? Okay, Drabby's talking to him.
Yeah, I want to know who delivered the news to him.
Yeah.
Is it Mark Lerner himself? Or
yeah, let's find out.
Yep.
All right, Mike. Hey, man. How are you?
Good morning. Chris. I'm doing fine. How are you guys?
Good.
Have you slept well the last couple of days?
I've been a little better.
I always sleep pretty well, guys. But it was a trying couple of days, and since the weekend. But hey, we're all adults here. We're big boys. We know what we're into when we take these jobs, and we had a hell of a run, and I'm proud of what we've accomplished, and I think we. I know I did it my way. I did it the way I led the organization and the franchise the way I felt was best to maximize our potential. And we had a lot of success. And at the end of the day, I've said this for years, every year since I've been on this program, it's, you know, this is a performance-based industry. And, and you know, when you don't perform up to the standards that that ownership has set, then it's their option to make changes, and they did.
Can't say the S word on the radio.
We should be able to. We should be able to say it, but we can't.
Crappy. Yeah.
Hey. Yeah. Exactly. So that's how I feel, and had a lot of. A lot of cool emotional interactions with current players, especially ex players and ex staff members, and people that I would not have expected to really have that kind of outpouring emotional response to what we did here in Washington.
Hey Riz,
it was pretty cool.
Riz, the timing of the dismissal kind of shocked me a little bit. It was confusing to me because you guys lost 11 straight, and I thought if there was going to be a move, either you taking out Davey or them taking out both of you, it would have been during 11 game losing streak. But then you went out west and then came back here, played the Tigers, and you went 7-6 in those 13 games. Now the Boston series was bad because you guys were, outscored 27-9. So I don't know, just the timing confused me. Were you kind of surprised by the word that you guys were out?
I was a little surprised, but I wasn't shocked. We had Mark Lerner and I talked every Monday since I've been here. So, we're in constant contact at least every Monday since I've been there. And when Ted was here, it was Ted and Mark every Monday. So, we have a pretty consistent communication throughout the season, and I don't think it was based on any one series. I don't think the Red Sox series pushed anybody over the edge, but I think it was a little surprising just because of the timing. But when you have conversations with ownership and they make decisions and when you are in a point where you're struggling in the season and you're trying to make everything right and play better baseball, it could happen. It could have happened at any time during the season. And, I had told them when they sat down with me the owner sat down with me and gave me the news. I said, I still believe I'm the best person to lead this organization to a championship. I still believe that. I still believe in the talent of this team. We've got a lot of good young players. We just don't match up with the big boys of the National League and the depth of good players. You know what I mean? I'll put our 3 or 4 or 5 young rookie type of players, service time players with any young players in the game. I know we matched up well against the Angels and the Tigers and those type of teams. When you look at how we played, certainly at certain points during the season, we beat the Orioles 5 out of 6, I think. As well as we played in the month of May was as bad as we played in the month of June. And I think that is just the epitome of a team that has seven or eight or nine players that made their major league debut this year, and you've got a bunch of young players on the team, and they just don't have the experiences to be consistent enough and gone through it enough to be a consistent everyday winner.
Joined by Mike Rizzo, the former president and general manager of the Nationals. He's presented by Main Street Bank. Cheer local, bank local. Put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. So one of the biggest questions from the fans is, were you given an ultimatum to fire Davey Martinez? Because the perception is that you guys were a tandem, you guys were a pair. And then kind of piggybacking off of that, were you frustrated that you couldn't spend the money that maybe you wanted to?
I think there was frustration to go around for everybody, from ownership to players, to scouting, to development, all that stuff. So yes, there was frustration from all sides, especially when you don't, you know, when you're not playing your best baseball and that type of thing. But I, like I said, I still believe in this team. I still think that they are not far away from competing for a playoff spot, and I think that in the long term, with the young current players on this team, and what you have in the minor leagues, and what this draft is going to produce for you, you know, picking 1-1, I think that this is going to be an attractive job for anybody that wants to come in and you know, really put their stamp on a team that's really close to winning and winning for a consistent period of time.
Mike, you said you talked to Mark every Monday, and you did that for 20 years, right? You also, by the way,
you
had an unbelievable quote where you said, you know, you managed that ownership group for almost 20 years. Did you have contact with others? I mean, I was stunned to see not only do you have learners, but you have like CEOs and CFOs and CEO, all these other people.
Never heard of Gottlieb till this week.
Yeah, you got grandkids. Did you feel like, did you have to answer to those people and sort of kind of all in that? You know, I always just assumed you were kind of safe because you were here. You were the architect of all that success. I never really felt like if there was going to be a change, I thought it'd be the manager. I actually didn't think it would be you. Did you feel like your job was on the line at various times throughout your tenure?
I would think that, you know, I've said, I've been in this game a long time, and it's my 43rd year in professional baseball. And I know how the game is played. I've been around regime changes. I've been around people that have been fired before. I have fired people before, and it's never an easy thing to do. I've never thought one time that I had to general manage for my job. I think that my resume and my reputation in the game speaks for itself. I think that I hold my head up high by the standards that we have developed here. And, you know, remember we took over from MLB, and this place was a circus act. I did it my way for 17 years. The Lerner family allowed me to have the keys to this franchise and build it and develop it in my personality and the way I wanted to do it. And, you know, my goal is to always achieve greatness, but with integrity and honesty and professionalism. And I think that, you know, I sleep well at night knowing that we did that. And I think that when you pull all the ex-players that we've ever had, all the ex-managers, all the ex-coaches, and a special shout out to every player, every manager I've ever had, every coach I've ever had, every scout, player development dude, trainer, clubby, these people are all so near and dear to my heart that they're as big a part of a championship franchise is as your starting shortstop is, in my opinion, because this stuff to win four division titles and a wild card and a pennant and an LLDS and an NLCS and a world championship in our first 14 years of existence is an amazing feat. And unfortunately, we had to tear it down and rebuild. The rebuild's taken longer than anybody wants it to. But the foundation of this rebuild is solid. It's strong, and like I said, that the person that steps in here is going to see the colors full. You've got guys that you've got some good service time to build around. You know, James Woods and the CJs and the Gores and the Cruises and that group of guys. And we just have to, you know, the next step for them is to add to that core and get more really, really good players, get a deeper lineup, get a deeper roster, and to be able to, you know, withstand the rigors of 162 games in 185 days.
Riz, I don't know if you read the Tom Lavero article that he put out, but
I did not.
Okay.
I haven't read a thing.
Okay.
Here's what I've done. Let me tell you what I've done. Just before your question,
right.
You know, this is my first year in 43 or 50 years. I never had a summer off when we were in Little League. So, my first year, I went to. I took my son to the swimming pool on Monday, and
right.
We went to story time yesterday. So
right,
that's awesome,
pretty cool.
All right, but the question I had was: he reported that back in 2019, that the Learners they extended Strasburg's contract without you knowing that. Is that true?
I'm not going to discuss our negotiations with any particular player. Strauss is a national Hall of Famer for me, and one of the reasons that we have a flag up there. But it makes no difference anymore. How the sausage is made. You know what I mean? four division titles, a wild card championship. NLCS, NLDS, pennant and a world championship kind of speaks for itself on the way we did business. And I think that I look at it this way, every GM that I know, and I know all of them, and I've known a lot of them that are not doing it anymore. We all have interactions with ownership, and each dynamic is different. And we're all big boys. You can live with the dynamic, or you can leave and not live with the dynamic. I always thought that the Learner family, Stan Kasten, specifically Ted Learner and Mark and the rest of the family, they gave me an opportunity back in 2009 to run an organization. There's 30 jobs like this in the whole world. You know what I mean? And they gave me an opportunity to do one of them. I'm eternally grateful for that. I think I paid them back in spades for the trust and loyalty that they showed me, because I've reciprocated to them, and it's been a great run, and I've got no regrets. There's things I would have done different, but no regrets on how I handle myself and how I handle the organization and the roster and the players.
What would you have done differently, Mike?
I'd have to think. I'm talking about specific signings and stuff like that. There's always 2020 is always 2020 hindsight is always crystal clear. So there's things that players I would have signed instead of other players and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But as far as the macro vision and the global look of the organization, we get it. I ran it the way I wanted to run it, and with honesty and integrity and professionalism. And I often say that my job is to deliver bad news to players. And I think that when you pull the players that we had, you know, we weren't always fuzzy and lovey-dovey, but we respect each other, and they respected the way I did my business and the way I treated them, because they, the players, are the reason that we do all this, because without the players, we have nothing. So,
Mike, we're going to promote the second annual Blackjack and Barbecue Bash here momentarily. We don't want to try and drill you down on a couple things, okay?
Okay, do it.
Short answer, because I think you dance around it, and maybe you're still going to dance around it, but were you given an ultimatum to fire Davey that would have maybe saved your job? Because that is what fans think.
Again, not discussing it. We have we had a lot of discussions over the 20 years I've been here. August 24th is my 19th year anniversary, would have been. And so we've got a lot of water under the bridge. We've had a lot of decisions to make. We've had a lot of discussions, arguments, yelling matches, hugs, and kisses.
It's not a no. All
right, so you don't want to answer that. How about this? Did you feel handcuffed in free agency?
You know, the secret of being a good executive and a good general manager is you do the best you can with what you have. And we've all gone through this, whether you're in baseball or in life in general. You do the best with what you have, and we didn't, in ownership's eyes, we didn't do enough with it, and so they made a change.
All right, so I got two questions for you, Mike, and I'm gonna preface this by saying I'm a fan of the team before I am a radio host. So I've always taken the position, and maybe I'm dumb, but. But beyond that, like, I've always just taken this position that, okay, it makes sense to me. Maybe ownership and management, whatever, decided we're not going to invest a lot of money in this team right now as we rebuild. And as we get closer, we're going to start spending money again like we did back in the day, you know, when Ted was around. Will ownership, in your opinion, spend money again to make this team competitive, or are we going to become the Pirates? Because as a fan, that's like, I can't even fathom that.
Yeah, I mean, without taking a shot at the Pirates, you know, they haven't won in, you know, since 1979. So right. we've had very, very current successes, a long streak of them. We had a really a 8-9 year run of it.
No doubt.
I think that separates us from. But you
in the future though
to lump us into a group that hasn't won in years and hasn't been competitive in years. I think that it's a false narrative. I think that this organization is always moving forward. I think when I was there, we were kind of we had the notice of the national media because of the personnel that we've always had here. We've had some of the biggest named baseball player celebrities that haven't played in a very, very short period of time in DC baseball. So to answer your question, I hope they do. To me, it's a smart business move to do, because when it's time to go, you should go.
All right. How about this,
that
Mike?
doesn't mean to pour in, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars on the free agent market alone, but make trades, take on contracts, do a Gio Gonzalez trade and extend them for a long term and that type of thing. So there's ways to do this the right way for extended success, and I think that there's a blueprint on how to do it already written in the files in Nationals Park.
Mike, we've been in the box with you, and I know that I've seen the army of guys with the computers, right? I've seen the computers on the walls with the exit velocities and all that stuff. Yeah. I know you're sensitive to this idea that the Nats are behind the curve analytically. What do you have to say to people, and especially even some quotes from some
in the media too,
some guys saying, hey, it's going to be totally different now, right? They're going to embrace analytics more. What do you say to that?
Yeah, embrace analytics, embrace scouting, embrace whatever you have to embrace. You got to win. And if you win four, if you win four divisions in 6 years, and you win a world championship in 8 years, then you succeeded. And if you didn't, all the computers and all the scouts and all the development people in the world have failed. And there's a lot of ways to win in this game, and there's a lot of ways to build championship rosters, and when you have people with smart ideas and diverse opinions, and that I think that's the healthiest thing you could have. We had it here, and I think that that's the reason we had such success in the organization.
Mike, since you won't be making the pick Sunday, who would you take number one in the draft?
I like that question.
It's a great question. I'm not going to answer it. I got it in my head right now.
Does he have a brother? Does he have a brother that plays for the Orioles?
My opinion has been put in the ballot box with Danny Haas, Brad, and Reed Dunn, and they're going to do a great job of this draft, like they did last draft, and you know, just a little shout out to those guys who grinded out grind it out for 8 months a year for these 3 days, and they're going to have to adjust accordingly at the last moment. So I think they'll be great.
Is it your prediction you will be a general manager next year?
I don't know about that. I think I would like to lead another organization and hoist a trophy one more time, and to do it with the right ownership group and the right mindset for an organization. I think that would appeal to me. I'm certainly not going to be egotistical enough to think that that people are going to be throwing job offers at me, but my resume and my personality, my background are pretty well known, and if I fit the right criteria for some ownership group, I would be honored to continue to join the fraternity of general managers, because it is a tough job, and you better be ready for the challenge. And I think I was up for it for 17 seasons, and I think that that my energy level, my health, my mind, and my leadership qualities are still at the upper echelons.
Mike, let me say this on behalf of the show and everybody here at the radio station. We've always appreciated your time with us. You've been great to us. And let me now transition into Riz Kids, which you can talk about. I'm kind of bummed because I'm going to be in Italy during the date, August 3rd, but you're going to have a blackjack tournament.
For you, right.
You got the barbecue bash, blackjack tournament entry, $1,000. Can you fill us in on Riz Kids and the second annual blackjack and barbecue bash?
Well, Riz Kids is our charitable arm for the Rizzo Family Foundation. It's at the MGM Casino and Hotel. Last year was the first time we did it. My wife Jody runs the whole show. Mike Beasley over there at MGM is a great friend.
He's awesome.
And he really helps us for this event to take off. It's a barbecue party that happens to have a blackjack tournament attached to it, where that you'd get the prize is $50,000 complimentary chips for your $1,000 entry, and it is a blast. We had a blast last year. You have somebody on there, have somebody on your show that was there last year. It was a blast, and we're anticipating this same The turnout's going to be great. The turnout last year was outstanding. This year, because of word of mouth, we've got a great turnout. We're going to expand the amount of people there because of the interest. The Rizzo Family Foundation and Riz Kids is here to, you know, we're committed to serve the DC community. All the funds and proceeds are targeted to Washington, D.C.'s neighborhoods that need this the most. It's a blackjack tournament on August 3rd at MGM Harbor. You don't need to play blackjack to be involved. You just come and contribute and buy a ticket to the barbecue badge. You go watch the blackjack tournament. We there'll be cigars smoked, there'll be drinks drunk, and there'll be food eaten, music listened to, and you'll have current, former players, you'll have former celebrities, you'll have some political people, you'll have some lobbyists, you'll have a whole bunch of
it'll be an awesome time,
crazy people there. It'll be fun.
Mike, we got to run.
Thank you very
much. Go to rizkids.com. You can get your information. It's August 3rd, 5:30 to 9:30. The barbecue bash kicks off at 7:30. You got the blackjack tournament. You're the best, Mike. We always appreciate it.
Mike, thank you very much.
Thank you, Riz.
Hey, it's been a pleasure, guys.
All right,
that's Mike Rizzo, former president and general manager of the Nationals, presented by Main Street Bank. Cheer local, bank local. Put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information.
Yesterday, Tim Strachan passed away at the age of 49 years old. So many people in our community know Tim, have worked with Tim, competed against Tim back when he was in high school before his very tragic accident, which put him in a wheelchair for the rest of his life when he was in a body surfing accident in Bethany Beach before his senior year in high school. I got a chance to get to know Tim over the years, called a couple of Maryland football games when Johnny couldn't make them, three of them, in fact, and loved working by his side. And he passed away yesterday, and it's a hurt for a lot of people, including his best friend for a long time, not just a friend, but a competitor when you go all the way back to Kevin Ricca's days at St. John's, when Tim was legitimately one of the top two or three quarterback prospects in the country with Peyton Manning. It was basically in a lot of the, you know, when you looked at a lot of the 93 high school rankings, it was Peyton 1, Tim Strachan 2. He was a phenomenal athlete, phenomenal all-around athlete before that accident, before his senior year in high school. But Kevin competed against him. Tim was at DeMatha playing for, by the way, one of the great coaches ever in Bill McGregor. Also played for Morgan Wooten, played basketball. I mean, you're talking about a guy who played for two Hall of Fame coaches in two different sports. Kevin joins us right now. So the first thing, Kevin, obviously, is I'm so sorry for the loss. I know how many of you are hurting. And by the way, let me just send my condolences out to, you know, Rich, who I've gotten to know a little bit, and Mary, his parents, and Leslie, the kids, and you know, Brett, Bo, Pooh, all of the members of the Strachan family. But sorry for the loss, but I wanted to have you on because nobody knew him better and could talk about Tim better than you could. So what are your thoughts today?
Well, I appreciate you having me on here, Kevin, to talk about the man, and we could go on for hours, and we have been for the last week over at Sibley Hospital. Not a great venue for that, but the stories were tremendous nonetheless, and I'm glad you mentioned all the Strachan family. What strength and resolve they showed, and let me be the first one to say, Miss Leslie Strachan was the strength, the MVP, the anchor. She ran the show, and their love story was a beautiful one, and I got front row seats to that this week, so I wanted to make sure we started off with Mrs. Leslie Strachan being tough as nails. And she was remarkable. So,
you know, I think a lot of people listening that certainly know Tim's story. And look, he called football games with Johnny, Maryland football games, for years. I mean, he's been working with you calling WCAC games for years. And he was really good. And I got a chance just on a couple of occasions to work with him and really enjoyed it. But, you know, a lot of people want to know what Tim was, you know, as a man for sure, but let's go back to what a great athlete he was. He's one of the better all-around athletes this area's ever produced. What was he like as a football player and as a basketball player, as an all-around athlete back in the early 90s?
Well, I got to tell you, Kevin, back in the early 90s, I didn't have a clue because I just wanted to beat him, and I thought about beating him every day. That guy was a big, huge dude.
He was a man
child when we were kids.
Yeah.
He was, and I wasn't. But I, you know, as a competitor, you have to think you're the best. You have to at all times, or why show up? And it took me until after college, coming back and putting film in, I said to my dad, why didn't someone tell me how much better T was than I was at the quarterback position? Holy moly. But as a basketball player, that was my first love. And T and I just played relentless hoops. We played in a game against each other at American University. DeMatha was undefeated, had a 30-game win streak, a 40-game win streak, 30-0 the year before, number one team in the country. And T and I, he guarded me. Morgan Wooten put him in against his old buddy to guard him. Little head games out of Coach Wooten versus Coach Gallagher. And it was pretty remarkable that we were actually guarding each other on the basketball court at that level. And growing up with T, switch hitter, barreled up everything from the left side oppo. This dude had a beautiful swing, hated the sport. It was way too slow for him. It was not his thing, but he could have done that anywhere. Would have been a Division I basketball scholarship two guard had he not played football. Under the tutelage of Morgan Wooten, I don't think anyone's doubting that.
It's really incredible because we know, and everybody that remembers Tim as a high school athlete, and you do much more than people who are a little bit older like I do. I was just watching occasionally. How good of a college quarterback would he have become at Penn State?
Well, let me first off and say he would have been playing in the league. I've been riding around with him one way or another in a limousine on Super Bowl weekend for years, whether he was playing in it or we were just partying, because he was that level. He would have been an immediate impact player at Penn State. Brilliant, brilliant football brain.
Perfect. Did he commit to Penn State? I forget. Did he commit to Penn State or not?
He did not commit to Penn State, but okay. I will say this. I heard you talking about Peyton Manning earlier. We're over at Brian McCarthy's house, a high school All-American football receiver, son of Brendan McCarthy.
Yep.
The math is just amazingness there. We're over at his house, and T gets a call from Rich Strachan, and T's all bent out of shape, and he's stammering around the pool house, and he's mad. Peyton, we all thought, was going to Ole Miss, and T had an amazing visit down at Tennessee, and his dad called to say Peyton just committed to Tennessee. And T was all torn up about it, but Kevin, I reminded him that Gettysburg and Catholic University were really vying over my Division III services at the time.
Well, it's a good thing Catholic won that battle, because you're one of the all-time, I think you're still the all-time leading passer in Catholic football history. So,
well, let's just say I wasn't following where Peyton was going.
Yeah. So you think he would have been playing in the league. And that's the thing about people who got to know Tim later in life, obviously for obvious reasons. You know, he was 6'4", like 220 as a high school quarterback, right?
He was a tank. I mean, he was, as a sophomore, he was always bigger than everybody. He really was just that size. If you see this picture of him on, in a gray T-shirt playing 7-on-7 at 17 years old. He is a horse, man. His legs are trunks. He was the prototype. He threw the ball with such feathery touch, but if he needed a little zip on it, he could. And I've been in a huddle with this guy. I mean, there is not one variable you could have told me aside from injury, and unfortunately that's exactly what held him up from getting to the top, to the apex of the sport that he loved the most.
We're talking to Kevin Ricca. Kevin, in his own right, was a phenomenal athlete from the DMV, went to St. John's, then is truly one of the all-time great players in the history of Catholic football. Tim Strachan passed away yesterday. He had been sick with cancer for about a year, and Tim was one of the best athletes to ever play sports in the DMV at DeMatha in the early 90s before his accident that paralyzed him in the summer before his senior year. And as mentioned, I mean, he and Peyton were basically, you know, 1-2 in terms of quarterbacks in that class. You know, Tim was so good on the broadcasts, and he's worked with you on a lot of WCAC broadcasts, football and basketball. He never let his situation sort of deter him from telling a great story and being so inspirational as a storyteller and speaker. Did you ever think, because I remember working with him occasionally, and I'm like, man, you would have been a hell of a coach. Why do you think he didn't pursue that more, you know, passionately?
I think he was having such a good time calling games with the legendary Johnny Holiday. And, you know, T didn't get that typical college experience when we all got to get away. You know, he lived at home for a majority of the time, the entire time, and commuted down to College Park. So I think getting out on the road for some of those road games, he just fell in love with it. And the relationship he had with Johnny Holiday, I think he always thought he could coach or he would coach. And I think with T, life just happened, you know, when his gorgeous daughters, Sophie and Libby, were born. You know, that kind of put a little hitch in that as well. But he has a coach's mentality and brain, and that's exactly right. The way he sees the sport, Kevin, it slows down for him. And he's able to analyze it in a specific quarterback brain. And T is one of the smartest guys I've ever known. And you pair that up with football smarts, and he had plenty of it. He could have been an incredible coach, and I really wish he would have. I'd love to have done it with him.
Yeah, became a lawyer as well. I mean, just an incredible life, just far too short. But his adversity, he obviously was able to do a hell of a lot with it. An incredible person, and really sorry to hear the news yesterday. And I wish you the best, and thinking about all of you guys. Thanks for doing this, Kevin. Much appreciated.
Well, Kevin Sheehan, I just want you to know, thank you very much. I did this because T and I are big fans of yours and what you do, and a great guy in the community, a big-time Woods Academy guy, and I did it because we're fans of yours, and I knew T would appreciate that. So,
Kevin,
thank you very
thanks.
Much for having me on here today, my man.
Yeah, I'll see you soon, and we'll certainly toast to T's life. Again, to his family, his parents, Mary and Rich, his wife, Leslie, the kids, to his brothers, who I've known for a while, Brett and Bo and Pooh, my condolences to all of you. What a life, just far too short. All right, that is it for the day. I will leave you with this. That alt uniform, the fourth, it's going to be the black alt uniform. And I think I'm going to be right, Max. I think it's going to be on Monday Night Football.
I hope
against
you are.
Chicago.
I really hope you are. It's exciting.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be right about that. Let's just say that, you know, I got some information about 15, 20 minutes ago. Tim Strachan, loved the time that I was able to spend with you. Rest in peace.
It's time to get out to the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Welcome in Redskins legend Gary Clark. Gary, what's going on? How you doing?
Well, how you gentlemen doing today?
Hey, man, we're doing good. I was at the place that I think they say you were there yesterday. Did you go to the little flag football thing yesterday?
I did.
Yeah, they were like, he was asking me who I thought were like the best speakers and motivators on the team, and I was like, well, Gary Clark. He was here yesterday. And then I said, Kendrick Golson, yep, he was here too. He's good. So I named the guys that I know that they have to pick from. And everybody I picked had been to one of those camps. Darnarian, Kendrick, you. I told him if you can get Rock Cartwright to start talking, he won't stop. But you got to get him started, you know. And he said, well, we're going to see how you are today. I was like, well, damn, y'all just put me on the spot. But it was fun, man. It was fun.
They do a good job with the kids.
Yes, they do. They do.
So, Gary, we wanted to talk to you about these uniforms that were released yesterday. It was fun seeing the gleam in B. Mitch's eye. I'm curious what your thoughts were when you saw these unis that were released that are kind of a throwback to that 80s and 90s era of the Redskins.
Well, I tell you what, you can never go wrong with anything that happened with the Washington team in the 80s and 90s. So I'm a superstitious guy, so whatever's going to make you win football games, put it out there. I'm just that way.
Hey, when you go ahead, Jay.
No, go ahead.
Hey, so I was telling Toby, when I started looking through videos and stuff from that time, it's like we were in the white uniforms, the white jersey, I would say 90, 85, 90% of the time. And we like they wasn't just necessarily our home jersey. Hell, we was in them on the road and all the time too.
Joe's a little superstitious too. We won a lot more in those jerseys, so superstition goes across the board.
So,
oh man.
Obviously you had a lot of success here in Washington. You saw Super Bowl victories, you were part of Super Bowl teams. What was it like to see this team after, I mean, for the first time in my life, this team won more than 10 games. This team went to an NFC championship game. What was it like seeing this team get back to that level of football again last season?
It was great. It was awesome to see the change in the fan base. Like, we went from having like 50-50 fans in the stadium by the end of the season. It was like 90 to 95% Washington fans in the stadium. And that's a huge benefit for your team, because there's nothing worse than playing at home and then you hear crowds, the other team do something good, and you hear the fans just roar. So for me, it was awesome to see that the burgundy gold was back to where it had been years ago, what me and B. Mitch was used to. I mean, we're just used to seeing it. It was an everyday occurrence for us when we played. But to see that they got back to that and seeing that people were coming out, people were wearing more gear, people were really supporting the burgundy gold, because, you know, winning allows you to do those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's cool just to see the fan base, because for me, you know, I'm only 26 years old, and growing up,
baby gear.
I didn't
get to see any of it.
No, I didn't. And so, you know, my family indoctrinated me, and I'm glad that they did. But, you know, a lot of my friends didn't grow up fans of this team. But it was cool to see for the first time really in my life that it was like you're walking around just going to the grocery store and people are wearing Jaden jerseys, and you're walking around and shopping, doing whatever, and you see people out in the burgundy and gold. It was cool to see that fan base kind of re-energized and see plenty of people that had left the team for one reason or another, whether it's because bad play or other stuff off the field. You know, at least you're starting to see some of this fan base come back and be what it once was.
Oh, yeah, and you're going to see it in the players, how the players play as well, because there's nothing like having a 12th man, truly having a 12th man. And we haven't had that for a long time. We just haven't, unfortunately. But now, in the last year, we did have a 12th man, and it makes the players play better. I mean, I love playing at RFK when I was playing. So I know for now, for the Redskins at Northwest Stadium, and for the Washington Commanders at Northwest Stadium, they're going to feel that too, because there's nothing like showcasing what you do best in front of the people who appreciate it most. So, I mean, I'm excited about the year coming up. I'm sure that the team is, and I guarantee you the players are. I guarantee you they're going to play much better football than they had in the past.
Winning
cures a lot of things.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned RFK and playing there and the possibility of them going back. Do you, in your mind, feel that this thing is going to happen, Gary? I know I do. I think we're going through the hemming and hawing of politics, but I think ultimately at the end, you'll have a stadium at that site.
I think so, too. I mean, for the district itself, it's nothing but the support, especially the revenue that it's going to generate for the city itself. Just in those different weekends that happens for the stadium. Not to mention that I'm sure that they'll go bring entertainment portions to the stadium as well. So D.C. will get a much, much needed revenue boost. And I don't know how you can say no to that. And in terms of like fans, some fans will complain. It's one day out of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only, 8 to 10 days out of the week,
mm-hmm.
out of the year. So, I mean, I'm almost certain it has. I mean, we've been doing some, you know, politicking ourselves and
campaigning,
lobbying, all the fun stuff,
and you know, allowing them to see, I mean, what it means to have the excitement of their patrons, just what, you know, with the alumni coming in and the excitement with their patrons. So imagine when you have, you know, these guys who play in the city now get to come. They'll come into D.C. more often as well. Just the players will come into D.C. more often now because it's the city that they play in.
One thing that you mentioned there is with the alumni and some of the relationship, talking with Gary Clark here on the Rude Guest Hotline, obviously we've heard Bemich's opinion and his experience and the difference in the change since ownership has changed in the relationship that the team has with the alumni. How have you felt that change?
Well, me and Bemich, we're pretty fortunate because of the way that we played. I mean, Bemich being the best return guy in NFL history, me being one of the more recognizable players back in Washington's heyday, we've always been treated pretty wise, nice by. I've never been treated bad by anybody. in the
and wouldn't let
show,
it happen.
So.
Yeah, and you shouldn't be, by the way.
I've always been treated extremely, extremely well by all the ownership that we have, from the Cooks to the Snyders to our current ownership. But there's something about the current ownership that gets everybody excited. Those guys are true gentlemen. They understand the pull that the alumni do have with the city, with the fans. They've been nothing but spectacular to all of us, you know. So I'm a big fan of the current administration, but I really have nothing bad to say about the old administration either, because at the end of the day, players win football games, not management. Coaches help, as long as they have a good strategy and a good philosophy, but players win football games. Like Brian Mitchell returns those punts and kicks, not the coach, not the owner, not the fans. So players win football games. Yeah. Let's not get it twisted. I hate when we start to blame other people when we lose. You know, we lost against that Giants game in 1986 in that freaking championship game that I sucked in. they had nothing to do with me sucking. I sucked.
Uh-huh.
Ownership had nothing to do with it. You know, fans had nothing to do with it. I sucked out on that day. So, you know, I mean, let's keep you know, it where it belongs. The players win football games. That's what they get paid to do. We get paid to do a job. If we don't do a job well, you can blame us, but you can't necessarily blame. You can't blame the ownership at all, because they really don't play. All they do is pay the players.
Yeah.
Well, there's one guy out there. They pay the players. There's a guy out there that's looking to get paid, which I think he should. I have a lot of respect for him, Terry McLaurin, a young man who. Been trying to get a new deal, an extension. Doesn't have guarantees on his contract right now. Your thoughts on Terry, you know, as a player and, you know, moving forward, do you feel he deserves to get that?
I'm a big fan of Terry McLaurin. I mean, I think Terry is one of the best leaders that the organization has had in a long time. He lets his play do the talking a lot. You know, you don't see him he reminds me a lot of Art Monk, to be quite honest. He reminds me of Art. He has hands like Ricky, passionate about the game like me, but he knows when to keep his mouth shut. He's not like me. He doesn't run his mouth to get anybody in trouble. So he's more disciplined than I was. But I literally think he may be one of the best receivers we've ever had in Washington. That's including me, Ricky, Art, Charlie, Bobby Mitchell. It's including Charlie Brown. It's including all the guys that play there. Like, he could hold his own with all of us. And I think – I'm hoping that they get something worked out, because I think he is a true – I mean, even at his age, he's not showing aging, you know. And like, his game is continually going up. You don't see his game going down at all. So I hope they get something worked out, I mean, because I think he is a true asset to – our offense. I think him and Jaden, you could see their chemistry is just off the chain. Like, I mean, like, that boy comes down with pretty much anything. If it touches his hand, he's coming down with it.
There you go.
And that's, I mean, you have like a 95 to 98% touch rate. They touch the ball, you come down with it 95 to 98% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard to argue with. I mean, I don't care what age you are, you know, and I think he's one of the best receivers in the league today, and I think he'll probably be one of the best receivers in the league for the next 3 to 5 years, if not longer.
Gary, I got to ask you.
He takes great care of himself.
Sorry to cut you off. Got to ask you, though, on the way out here. You're teammates with the man to my right for a couple of seasons, I believe 3 seasons. What's your best Brian Mitchell story?
What?
Which one? I mean, I think the best one that I've had is seeing him as a rookie in training camp. You know, we're in training camp, you know, and this guy's, you know, we come in, he's a quarterback, you know. So I've never seen a quarterback quite honestly act like B. Mitch before in my lifetime. They typically don't try to have any controversy. They definitely never want to fight anybody. B. Mitch's rookie training camp, he wanted to fight everybody, and won most of them. He even fought Jumpy Gathers, and I don't know anybody who wanted to fight Jumpy Gathers, but B. Mitch did not back down from him. I think what people love most about B. Mitch is he's 100%. He's 100% all day long, every day, any day, 100% effort, 100%. You better bring it, because he's bringing it 100% all the time. Practice, he's bringing it 100%. Games, he's bringing it 100%. So you can try to go on there like at 50%, he's going to like smash your ass. So excuse me, I'll say ass on the radio.
One you can say. I use it all the time.
he is the closest thing to me in terms of personality that I think the Washington team's ever had. I think his personality surpasses mine, and I had a big one. I think his surpasses mine. But it comes out in his numbers. Numbers don't lie.
Mm-hmm. 100%, Gary.
Numbers just don't lie. And what gets me, though, because I was a return guy throughout my whole career, pretty much, you know, from high school, from youth league to high school to college, you know, I was an all-purpose guy. And for B. Mitch to come up there, never in his life return a kick or a punt in his life, and have that immediate success and then longevity success, that's unheard of. I mean, that's why that gentleman definitely belongs in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, without question. Unfortunately, they just take their time in putting special team guys in. But without question, he is the best I've ever seen do it. And I've seen a lot do it. And he's
the best
I've ever seen do it.
Well, Gary, appreciate the time, man. And if it makes you feel any better, B. Mitch still is ready to fight anybody around here anytime.
100%. I know that already. I never gave him any crap as a rookie. I was like, he's crazy. I was like, that rookie's crazy. I'm going to leave him alone. I ain't going to make him sing. I'm not going to make him do anything. I was like, he's crazy. I'm leaving him alone.
Well, Gary, appreciate the time, man. Enjoy the rest of your day.
All right, G. Thank you, man. Appreciate you.
Thank you, guys. You guys have a great day.
You too, brother.
Absolutely. Peace, that's man. Washington legend Gary Clark on the Rude Guest Hotline. Coming up next, Brock Purdy had some nice things to say about another Washington receiver. We'll talk about that next here on The Fan.
Joining us now on the Rude Guest Hotline, Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. From CBS Sports, our guy, Joel Corey. Joel, good afternoon. Thanks for the time today.
What's up, Joel?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. Let's get into this Terry McLaurin contract situation. We've heard from a couple national reporters now that things aren't going swimmingly between the two parties. I think that's kind of, you know, agent agitation. You don't hear, you know, those complaints kind of usually coming from teams where, things aren't going well. But what do you think the difference is? Where's the gap? And how close do you think they are to being reasonably done?
Well, on the surface, it should be an easy deal to do, because Terry, Pro Bowl receiver, second team All-Pro last year. The big problem is, he was an old rookie, redshirted, spent 5 years in college, 24-year-old rookie, turns 30 in September. All the guys at the top of the market were either signing off of their rookie contract or they're at least 2 years younger. So that's the big problem. The 3 is the first digit in his age. We're seeing that's a problem in Cincinnati with Trey Hendrickson, that they want to do a short-term commitment, but they don't want to go the longer-term commitment in that case. So age is really a big issue in this case.
So Joel, the one thing that I saw you write about in the article at CBSSports.com, comping it to the Tyreek Hill extension with the Miami Dolphins, when essentially he was getting, you know, $30 million per, but he got $54 million guaranteed at signing. Do you think that is a more realistic comp than the DK Metcalf numbers that have been thrown around here?
That's a hard comp, because that was a unique situation that he was under contract for 3 years, because the way his contract was structured, that he was never going to play out the end. It just had a big number and salary purposes. They essentially ripped it up and gave your deal. Tyreek did it when it was 30, If I'm Terry's camp, my whole thing is I arguably had my best year. They would say he had his best year in 2024. I am not slowing down, so age shouldn't be a concern or an issue in this negotiation. So they're going to look more to DK Metcalf for that reason and one other. DK Metcalf was in his same draft class, 2019. He declared early, as opposed to playing 5 years like Terry did. And if you looked at the stats over the 5 years, they favored Terry, and particularly last year, DK Metcalf didn't have 1,000 yards. But DK Metcalf has something you can't find at receiver. 6'3", 230 pounds, great speed. Those physical traits don't grow on trees. So that isn't necessarily a spot-on comp for a variety of reasons.
Joel Corey with us here on Grant and Danny Linnell in for GP, CBS Sports, salary cap, and contract expert. Kind enough to join us to break down this Terry McLaurin situation. So, Joel, taking personality and what he's meant to the team, obviously he's been through multiple regimes, been productive despite some pretty adverse circumstances, but just playing cutthroat GM for a second, tell me where I'm off base on this. I would say the franchise tag next year is $28 million. The franchise tag the year after that, if we do it a second time, is 120% of that, roughly 33. I got you under contract for this year, two more years. I don't want to meet an escalated asking price over that. Why wouldn't I just do that? You know, sort of take your chances, and I could offer you a contract that's reflective of that, maybe a little more to sweeten the pot, but not going up to some of these other numbers when I've got a little more leverage here. Where am I off base?
A little off base on the franchise tag number. It's actually going to be slightly over 30 with the way the 120% calculation.
So next year it'll be over that? Okay.
It's performed. Yeah, but same concept that if you don't want to meet his asking price, you don't want to make the longer-term commitment, then you would go to year-to-year. The problem is, what carry are you going to get if he has to play out his contract? Sometimes guys in contract years, it affects them. Sometimes it doesn't. We don't know in this particular case because he never seen him in a contract year having to perform. But that being said, you're not going to get a deal done, in my opinion, if you are going to keep not reflect he's the number one receiver. The two distinct markets, number one receiver, number two receiver. On this team, he's the number one receiver. He's your primary target. The top of the number two market is T. Higgins. T. Higgins would be a number one receiver a lot of other places, just not in Cincinnati. He signed a four-year extension, a lot younger. I think he's 26, averaging $28.75 million per year. So if you're not going to top that number, I don't think there's any deal that Terry McLaurin is going to consider.
Joel, the other holdup in this, and I guess this is me asking you, is it more about the guaranteed money, do you think, for Terry, or is it about the AAV?
It's probably a combination of all the things. In DK Metcalf's contract, he had $60 million fully guaranteed at signing. The last 20 guarantees are kind of meaningless because they're injury guarantees. Pittsburgh traditionally doesn't guarantee a lot of money in veteran contracts. They've only done it for three players. Minkah Fitzpatrick was no longer there. T.J. Watt was the first, and now Metcalf getting guarantees in the second year. So, he's going to want comparable guarantees. He's probably going to want decent cash flow. You do have a deal that he's done before. You can use as a blueprint if you're talking 3 year extension, and just use that kind of structure is the guide for a new deal if you can agree upon what the actual total dollars would be on the extension.
So, Joel, you've been in these negotiations before, and you know so much about this from kind of both sides of the table. What is the team arguing, or are they? Like, how is this negotiation going, and why are the only things that we're hearing at this point about how far apart they are?
Yeah. Well, the only time you hear someone so far apart, it's obviously the agent's side because they're trying to put public pressure on the team to right. get to a point that the team doesn't want to go. So teams typically don't leak. This player is asking way too much money. It's typically that's when the player's trying to use what he can to apply some sort of pressure. It's still kind of early. I know training camp starts in about 2 weeks. It will be interesting to see what Terry would do if there's not a deal done by then. Would he hold out? That's $50,000 per day for each training camp day he's not there. And that's a mandatory fine. Or would he hold in where he shows up to avoid the fine participates on a very limited basis or not at all, and does classroom work until there's a deal done. I think the time to be concerned is as we start getting the middle of the preseason, mid-August, if there's not a deal done, then maybe you should really be a little more concerned than today.
Joel, I would have had several heart attacks by that point. If it drags that far out, let me ask you this, I guess. The longer it goes, do you think it decreases the likelihood of it getting done?
Not necessarily, because we've seen situations each year where it drags out and eventually they get done. Adam Peters comes from a team where,
that's true,
up until this year, they dragged out everything. Last year, San Francisco, Brandon Ayuk held in. That was done late. Trent Williams held out. That was done late. Nick Bosa, when Adam was still there, that was done late. Debo had some issues. It got done a few days into training camp. So, you know, it's kind of the nature of the beast.
What timetable would make the most sense? Just kind of nailing that down here. Like, I just, to me, at the CBA, the way it's set up, and again, correct me if I'm wrong here, Joel, but it's just not incentivized for players to hold out and get fined, and they need to be there to recruit the service time. If they want to change that, they should talk to their union rep, which I want to get to in a second too with you, by the way, about what's going on at the highest levels. But what timetable makes the most sense to you?
Start a training camp is ideal, because then Terry's there, you're getting him for the full benefit to try to build upon the success of last year. But he's a multi-year vet. He probably knows how long it takes for him to get ready to play and to have a successful season. The longer this thing drags on, the one thing you have to worry about is some sort of soft tissue injury, because we've seen that time and time again where there's a contract dispute which drags on. The player has a soft tissue injury and he's out 2-3 or more or multiple games because of some sort of hamstring injury or quad injury, groin or whatever he had.
Joel, I know people aren't going to want to hear this, and we're still a ways away from this. I understand. What would be the trade value for Terry McLaurin if it got to that point?
Well, you got to look at the DK Metcalf trade as something you'd have to, which would be in the ballpark. That was essentially a second-round pick. The problem is Redskins are trying to win now. If you're going to trade him, you need to do it before the draft so you could get someone who could come in, you could replace him, draft pick. You don't have anyone on the roster who can effectively do what Terry does. I know you traded for Debo Samuel, but he hasn't been highly productive since 2021, which was his last contract year, so I have my reservations about him. I don't see a scenario where they're going to trade him because they're trying to win and get to a Super Bowl this year.
Give our guy Joel Corey a follow, at Corey Joel on the old Twitterverse. Joel, quick gear shift here, but I can think of no one better to explain to the people what the hell's going on. NFLPA and the NFL, we've got some shenanigans, tomfoolery, maybe even you could call it ballyhoo at the highest levels. I guess there's a vote now taking place about what to do with union leadership. Catch people up as to what's going on.
This all stems from the collusion case that was brought because of quarterbacks not getting fully guaranteed contracts after Deshaun Watson. There was a decision which the arbitrator made in January, which said that the NFL tried to encourage collusion, but did not actually engage in collusion. There was an agreement between union leadership and the NFL to keep that ruling secret. Pablo Torre and Mike Florio, to their efforts, got a copy of the 61-page decision. It paints the NFL. It's not a good look for the NFL. It's also not a good look for union leadership not to try to weaponize this and use it for players. Then it comes out that today, which is almost as bad, that there's a conflict of interest with the executive director, Lloyd Howe, that he works for he's doing some consulting for a company which has ties to the NFL. If you are the union head of the union, that should be a full-time job. You shouldn't be moonlighting. It shouldn't be any type of company which has any type of NFL ties. So, yeah, if I'm an agent, one, I would have liked to have had that agreement in January, or you could discuss it with us at the annual seminar with agents at the Combine so I could have it going into free agency. If I'm players, why is the union keeping us in the dark? So, yeah, there's a lot to discuss, and the more stuff that comes out, if this isn't it, It's going to take 2/3 of the player rep board to change union leadership. Well, we could be headed in that direction.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like it's one of those stories that is, I think, kind of under the radar for the general public here as well. But that is a major, major shakeup there. Joel, awesome as always, buddy.
Thanks,
Have a great afternoon. Thank you.